Morning, everyone. Today's daf Kuf Chaf Aleph, 121. We are second to the last daf of the Masechta. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf of the Lung Azech and Ishmael Sleep Gabriel Bashmuel. We are on Kuf Chaf Amud Beis, and we're in this last parak of the Masechta describing exactly what needs to be identified in order to come back and report that the husband is in fact dead so that the wife can remarry. In the 10th parak of the Masechta, we talked about Eidus Isha in terms of one witness being valid, and one witness doesn't have to be normally a valid someone who normally can testify. So it could be a woman, it could be hearsay, it could be aid mipi aid. In the 15th parak of the Masechta, that was the previous parak, we discussed a woman herself testifying that her husband is dead, which under most circumstances is permitted. And then in this last parak, we're talking about what exactly needs to be seen in order to identify that the husband, in fact, died. So if you look back at Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph, where we saw this yesterday, but if you look back at the Mishnah, I'm just going to reread the Mishnah, Chaz of the Mishnah over, so that we are grounded for the Gemara that we're about to read. The Mishnah says, "Ein meidim ela parts upon him imachotam." So the Mishnah says, in order to testify, you have to see the face together with the nose. Alpha b'shiyeh shimanim begufo v'kelav, and even if there's simanim, there are telltale signs on the body or on the clothing that's being worn. So the Mishnah says that's insufficient. In order to get the critical data necessary to know that the person, this is in fact the person who you're testifying about, so you need to see the face, and the face has to be complete, says the Mishnah. It has to have the nose as well. We learned in the Gemara yesterday, it's got to be every feature of the face. It's got to be the forehead. It's got to be the bottom part of the face. The Gemara yesterday said that you have to be able to identify every facet of the face. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, "Me'idim el achitetz nafsho," and also says the Mishnah, you have to see death. You have to actually see. You have to be there to testify that you were there for the time of death. But the Mishnah goes on to say, "Va'afilu ra'u meguya v'tzalu v'achaya ochelas bo." And even if you were there to see a limb get cut off, or if you saw crucifixion, or if you saw him being attacked by an animal, and you saw that person dying, so the Mishnah says that's just simply not enough. You have to actually see death itself. And finally, the Mishnah ended up by saying, you have to be there witnessing the body 3 days post-mortem. Any point after 3 days, so there's so much decomposition in the body, so the body is simply unidentifiable after 3 days. And then Rav Yehuda ben Bava Omer, lo kol adam, lo kol amakom, lo kol asher shavim. And Rav Yehuda says you cannot put an objective time of 72 hours. Rav Yehuda says it can't be because not everything's the same. Now, we know that Rav Yehuda is objecting to the objective time of 3 days, but we don't know, which we're going to see in just a moment in the Gemara, is where does Rav Yehuda go? Is he more machmer? Is he more mekel? The Gemara is going to ask that very question, and the Gemara is going to respond to that question. We find ourselves on the top of Kuf Chaf Amud Beis, 120b. We're towards the top of the page. We are on the topic of Simanim. The Mishnah says Simanim are no good. In other words, you have to see the face, and if you cannot see the face, and even if there are other parts of the body that you saw, and you know that there's a mole on the second toe of the body of that person, and you know that that's so, and you saw the mole, and it sounds like for the Mishnah that's not enough. Or if, let's say, he wears an article of clothing that you know belongs to him, and you weren't able to identify the face, but you saw the clothing, the Mishnah says that's not enough. To which the Gemara says, why isn't that enough? We have a concept of simanim. We know that when you find a lost item, and the item has a telltale mark on the item, so the owner, you return it to the owner, and the owner can claim full ownership based on the simanim are given. There is a debate in the Gemara, not here, but the Gemara Bava Metzia, whether simanim operate on a deraisa or on a derabanan level, whether simanim are deraisa or derabanan. Okay, but still, there's a concept of simanim, so why doesn't simanim allow us to identify the body? So, Hakitani, let's start from the top of Kuf Chaf Amud Beis. Ulahaklish Adama Rava Simanim Daraisa. So the Gemara says, now according to the approach that Rava is of the position that Simanim operate at Daraisa level, Hakitani Afapishe Simanim Begufa Vekelov. So the Gemara says, so how do you understand our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says that even with Simanim, you can't go back and you can't say, look, I didn't see the face, but here's what I saw. And you actually went over telltale signs that indicated that this is in fact the person. So how does that work? So the Gemara gives a couple of answers. So the Gemara says, Gufo the Aruch V'Gutz. So in terms of the goof mentioned in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that if you identify the body, that's not enough. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is you didn't really do much in terms of identification. All you did is you said, you know, I saw the body, and there's not much I could report about it, but it's short. Right? The person was short. Or, person was tall. But that's all you said. So to which the Gemara now is arguing, that's not a simon. Meaning that's not a telltale sign that really identifies a person. Many people in this world are short, many people in this world are tall. So that's not really a simon. And Caleb, now what about the fact that he was wearing clothing, and we all know that that's the clothing that he wears. So the Gemara says, Chayshin l'sheila. So the Gemara says, that's also not going to be a good proof, because clothing doesn't mean that that's the owner of the clothing wearing that clothing. Many, often is the time where you lend an article of clothing to somebody else, so it could be that belongs to somebody else. So this is basically the point we got to yesterday. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Really? So you're worried about people lending things. So if you're worried about people lending things, so let's say you had a chamor, you found a donkey. And how do you know that this donkey belonged to so-and-so? All donkeys look the same. So the Gemara said, to me at least. So the Gemara says, well, not here, the Gemara Bamtzia. Gemara says, well, there was a saddle, and we all know whose saddle belongs to. The saddle was identifiable. So the Gemara says, a saddle and a donkey, that doesn't mean anything. Right? In other words, it's very possible that he borrowed the saddle, and he saddled another donkey, not his own donkey, with that saddle. So why should a saddle be a telltale sign on the donkey? So the Gemara says, Lo shayli inshe uchva de misakev le lechamra. Or lechamara. The Gemara says, no, people don't lend out saddles. Saddles are form-fitting. Try to put a saddle of one donkey on top of another, so it's going to scratch, it's going to be an abrasion on the other donkey. So the Gemara says, no. When it comes to saddles, they are custom-fit. And so therefore, no one's going to be lending saddles from one to another. If you know that your saddle's on a donkey, you can safely assume that the donkey belongs to you. Okay. The Gemara continues. Matzu kasher b'kisuv ha'niki v'tavas. So the Gemara goes back to a Mishnah Gittin. We saw this yesterday. Where if the get was tied with some sort, it was in some sort of purse, or it was in an arniki, or it was tied with a signet ring, or so you return it back to its original hechem adrinan. So tabas chay shli ziyufi kids for arniki menachshe ishi v'lo mushle. So the Gemara again is bothered by the simple question. So how do you return such items? If it's a signet ring, a taba'as, so chayish li ziyufi, we're worried about counterfeit. Rashi, shema yase chosam v'tzura keneged tabaso, v'yelech v'yiraso li'ishto v'yitol haymenu kol asher yishol. So showing the ring, so the signet ring, so maybe it was a counterfeit. So kitz v'arniki menachshe inshi v'lo munshle. And as far as kitz v'arniki, so the Gemara says people are very superstitious. Now, I know it's a funny comment of the Gemara about us being superstitious. We shouldn't be superstitious, but the Gemara says we are. So the take a look at Rashi. Rashi describes the superstition. Rashi says, "Menachshe inshi shlo yitol zem mazalo ve'i kasha akatani oshnimsa ben kelav ha'amar dechayshin l'sheila lo kasha." So the Gemara says, "Okay." So the Gemara says, when it comes to rings and wallets, so the Gemara says people do not lend that out. And the reason why people don't lend it out is because if I lend my ring out, people are going to make a counterfeit. And if I lend my wallet out, that's bad for my mazel. Okay, Rashi's bothered. If that's true, so let's go back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if we see a person, we can't identify the face, but there are rings on the person, so the Mishnah says that's not good. So Rashi's bothered. Why isn't that good? Rashi writes, so, Ben Kelev Hamar de Chayshin L'Sheilo Kasha, Kelev de Masisin Haina Begadov. V'derech la'ashol melubashim. V'kelav digin hainu ben kli tashmishe beso b'tevaso she'in derech la'ashila. So Rashi writes that, no, with our Mishnah that's saying that clothing is not a simon. So Rashi says, that's talking about clothing. We're more than comfortable lending out our clothing to other people. You're going on a trip, you need a jacket. Okay, good. Recently I went on a trip down south. I needed a jacket. Okay, so I don't know. I don't mean a coat. So I had to borrow. Fine. So Gemara Tzav Rashi says that's what our Mishnah is talking about. That's why the clothing are not going to be a good simon. But what we're talking about over here when we're saying Kalev, we're talking about our signet ring, meaning things that are much more personal and things that people will not lend out. Ibaisema, or the Gemara says another way to understand it is Kalev. Sorry, I lost my spot. Here we go. Ibaisema, Kalev, Bechivre Vesumke. What our mission is describing over here, that clothing is not going to be a telltale sign, is that what you're identifying is not really anything specific about the clothing. You just called out its color. It was white. It was red. No, that's all you said. Right? I know it's him because he was wearing a white shirt. Okay.
Like saying short and tall.
Yeah, it's short, it's tall. It's not really specific enough where that could really be some way to identify a person. Okay, so our Mishnah says that that clothing is not going to be a simon. Our Mishnah says that a something on his body is not going to be a simon. So the Gemara says that if it's a non-specific simon, so then that's not going to be a way to identify. Sounds like from the Gemara's discussion that if it is a specific simon, if you know that there's a mole on the on the third toe of his left foot, so and you know it and you saw it, and so it sounds like from the Gemara that would in fact be a good way of identifying the person. Again, that's not me saying halacha. That's just the simple reading of the Gemara. Okay, our Mishnah then went on to say that in order to testify that you saw a person die, so you didn't have to see him dying. You have to see have seen him died. He has to have been dead. So the Gemara says, and even if it's an easy prognosis, and you're saying, look, I just saw a leg got cut off the person, and he was bleeding to death, but you didn't see him actually dying. So the Mishnah says that's not going to be enough. That's not sufficient. So the lememra de meguyer chayev reminu. So what does it sound like from the Mishnah? It sounds like from the Mishnah that if somebody gets a limb cut off. So the Mishnah makes it sound like there's a possibility that he's going to survive. Because our Mishnah says that if you came back and you testified that you saw that, that's insufficient. So why is that insufficient? Because because there's a chance that he's going to live. Or Reminu, the Gemara is bothered because we have a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Olos. Adameinu mitame ashetet senavsho, afilu megulyav, afilu goseis. A person gives off tumas meis when? Only after he dies. Even if he was meguyad, even if he was his leg was cut, it doesn't have to be leg, but you'll see why I say leg. Even if his leg was cut, vafilo goseis, and even if he's a goseis, he's in the throes of death. He's on his way out, but in terms of tumas meis, it's not going to be enough. What does that Mishnah Olo sound like? The Gemara makes a diuk. Temuye lo mitame. The Mishnah is focusing on the idea that he's not mitame until he's actually dead. But it sounds like from the Mishnah, but he's on his way. It's a simple pshat in the Mishnah, is that the only issue is when he's going to give off tuma. But it's understood from that Mishnah that he's there, he's knocking on the door, and it's inevitable. Ha-michi lo-chaye, but he's not living. Am-rabbi lo-kashi, ar-rishim, am-rilazah, ar-rabbanan. So Abai is going to give an answer, and Abai is going to say, we have a machlokas. If you see somebody in the throes of death, he's a goseis, or if you see somebody who is now bleeding out, and he's about to die, but you didn't see the actual death, can you testify about him being dead? So the Gemara now is suggesting it's machlokas tanaim. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa, me'idin al meguya ve'eimayidim al atzalav. The Tanakhama says that you can testify about meguya, somebody was cut, was chopped, so you can testify about him even though you didn't actually see the death. You saw him bleeding, but you didn't see him actually bleed out. Eimayidim. So, that you are allowed to testify. But somebody's crucified, so that's you can't testify about that. That death is not imminent. There is a possibility for him to survive the crucifixion. So the Gemara says that there you actually have to see his life terminate. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar disagrees. If Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that if you see somebody get a limb chopped off and you see him bleeding, and even though it looks like he's bleeding out, but nevertheless, that doesn't mean that he's absolutely going to die, and you can't testify about his death unless you see the actual death. Okay, so what the Gemara now is saying is that our Mishnah that says that even though you saw him bleeding, but a limb got chopped and you saw him bleeding, our Mishnah is going like the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Gemara says, "Umi matzus lukim ekeru Shimon ben Elazar v'aktani seifa." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but let's go on in the Mishnah." In the end of the Mishnah, it says, "Ma'in sabasi be'achad she shilshulu liyam v'lo al tibi adam ela raglam." So a terrible story the Gemara tells in the town of Asya, where they drop someone into the sea, okay, like scuba diving, if you will, and they had him tied to a rope. They pulled up the rope, and unfortunately, the only thing that came up on the rope was only a leg. Ela raglam. Amr chachamim in arkuva lamala tenase, in arkuva lamata lo tenase. Okay. So where's the rest of his body? We don't know. What did the Chachamim say? It depends at what joint, at what juncture was the leg cut. If the leg was cut below the knee, I mean below, meaning what's the medical term when it's further away from the body? Distal. Okay, so if it's distal, in other words, towards the toe. So the Gemara says that is not that's not terminal. If it's above the knee, so the Gemara says at that point in time it is absolutely terminal. I assume the arkuv is a knee. Maybe a higher joint, maybe even as high as a thigh. But just for the time being, I'm going to assume that the arkuv is a knee. So the tinaseh min arkuv alamatol tinaseh. So the Gemara is bothered. Why? Because here we have a it's a Mishnah, and the Mishnah describes how we're going to have a limb that's severed, and the Mishnah says it depends what joint it is where it's cut. And the Mishnah says that if it was cut below the knee, the person's going to survive. If it's cut above the knee, the person's not going to survive. How can you say then that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says that I see somebody miguyad, you cannot testify because he's not. The death is not imminent. So the Gemara says Shani Maya Demarzei Maka. So the Gemara says no. The Mishnah that we're quoting on the next Amud, which we're actually going to see in just a moment, so that Mishnah is describing where the person's in the water. The Gemara says that when you have a cut and you're in water, so water only exacerbates the situation, it makes death imminent. That's what the Gemara now is arguing. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I saw an Arab take a sword and cut a leg of a camel. The camel was groaning and he groaned to death, meaning that he died. So what do you see? You see that when you cut the leg of a camel, and again, the Gemara here is equating an animal and a human. The Gemara is assuming that there is no difference in terms of prognosis when the limb of an animal or a human is cut. And the Gemara is bothered by the fact that this camel died. So Amar Abaye Kechisha Havya. So the one answer the Gemara gives, the Abaye's answer is that camel was extremely weak, and that's why the camel died. But under normal circumstances, if a person has quote unquote normal strength, so he would be able to survive even if he had a limb cut off. Rav Amar B'Sakim Milovenes V'Divrei Akol, and Rav says that the sword. The knife was meluvenes; it was white hot, and it's going like everybody. So, what does Rashi explain? What meluvenes? How does that help us? Rashi says, "Beish the sword was flaming hot. Shemitoch hamichve misrape." So it cauterizes a cut. So Rashi says, explaining a Rava's answer, that when the knife is so hot, it cauterizes a cut. So then you're able to survive. But if it's not a knife that's hot and doesn't cauterize, so then the person is simply going to bleed out. Another way to approach this problem. Okay, so a big discussion in the Gemara, whether you see a limb being cut, but you didn't see the actual death itself. What can you assume? Is the person going to die? The person not going to die? What kind of assumption can you make? From our Mishnah, it sounds like you can make no assumption. From the statement of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, it seems that you can make an assumption. The Mishnah later on makes a distinction between above the knee and below the knee. The Gemara tells a story about a camel having his leg cut off and the camel dying. So how do you put all that together? So Abai and Rava have different ways of trying to address all these different scenarios. Amar v'achaya ocheles. Okay, you see somebody being attacked by animals, so the Mishnah says that's not enough. Even if you see the animal already starting to eat away at the body, you cannot assume that the person is absolutely dead, and there may have been a way that he survived. You cannot go back, and you can't testify to his wife that you saw about the death of the husband. Now, that's only if the animal is taking a limb where the person can live without the limb. But if the animal is attacking a vital organ of the body, So then, even if you didn't see the actual death itself, but you can go back and you can testify that the person died. At that point, the safe assumption that you can make, the halachic assumption that you can make, is that the person is in fact dead. A statement made by Shmuel, which is that if you shecht, if you were to sever either the two pipes or the majority of the two pipes, whenever the Gemara here talks about the two pipes, it's talking about the trachea and the esophagus running down the neck of a person. So just like by shechita, when you shecht an animal, so the halacha is you have to cut the two pipes, and the assumption is that the animal is dead the moment that the two pipes are severed. Similarly, over here, when you are cutting the pipes of a human, so if you go through the two pipes, the majority of the two pipes, the person's dead. So even if you even if all you saw was just the severance, but you didn't, you weren't there for the actual Yitzias Neshama, you weren't there for when the Neshama left the body, nevertheless, Rav Yehuda Mishmol says that you could testify that the person's dead. Any of the Gemara is bothered because V'amar Rav Yehuda Mishmol Shachar Boshnaim or Roshnaim V'ramas V'amar Kitzvah Get Lishti Arei Elo Yichtiv Av Yidnu. So, Gemara is bothered by the following. Another statement made by Rav Yehuda Mishmol, it's the same Baal Memra, so it's obviously it's a very strong question, which is that if someone gets cut and is cut in the pipes, so he's not immediately dead. He still has moments of life left. In those last moments of his life, he can give instruction to somebody to write a get for his wife, and the get can be written at that point in time and delivered, and his wife will not be a almana, but she'll be a grusha. And that can be very helpful and very valuable because, let's say, she's not particularly interested in the brother-in-law, and her husband, her dying husband, is trying to save her from the mitzvah of Yibum with her brother-in-law. So at that point in time, while he's in the throes of death, he can instruct to have a get being written. So, Harei Elo Yichtiv V'Yitnu. Well, Gemara is bothered by the following. Previously, Rav Yehuda Mishmol says that if you were the witness to see somebody's two pipes getting cut, so you can testify that he died. What the Gemara is assuming is that it's because he's dead. On the other hand, we just saw another statement by Rav Yehuda Mishmol that when the two pipes are cut, he's not actually dead yet. He's in the throes of death. Time will allow him to instruct a get to be written for his wife. Okay, that seems to be a problem. The Gemara gives a solution. It's the obvious solution. Chai hu v'sof alamos. So the Gemara says, no. Right now, when immediately after the severance of the two pipes, he's still alive. But it's also known that there is no survival rate, and that he's not going to survive, and he is going to die. So in terms of his ability to instruct others to write a get for his wife, so that, yeah, that he can do because he's not dead yet. In terms of the inevitability of his death, it's inevitable. And so therefore, if all you saw was the severing of the two pipes, but you didn't see anything more than that, you can go back and you can report that he's actually dead. So the Gemara says, okay. So what does that mean? Cutting the two pipes is murder. That's what it means. So the Gemara says, so let's say you did a bishoge, you did it inadvertently, terrible accident, you cut somebody's two pipes, so you should go into galus. Sounds that way. On the other hand, we have a brisa. Shachar shneim arav shneim harei zein gola. The brisa says that if by accident you severed the two pipes of another human being, so you're not sent into galus. Why not? You killed the person. Again, bishoge, you did it inadvertently, but you should go into galus. So the Gemara's answer is Hayin Marlam Rav Hoshia Chayshin and Shemaruch Bavalasa. So the Gemara over here gives two very fundamental answers in terms of why the person involved in such an act is not going to be sent to Galus. Number one, we're concerned that maybe Aruch Bavalasa, that what you did is you didn't immediately kill him. What happened was is that you exposed him, gave him serious exposure now to the elements, and now with a little bit of wind, so the wind accelerated his death. So in other words, you were obviously a very important part of his demise, but you weren't the only reason why he died. The wind had an assist, and that assistance of the wind is going to exempt you from exile. That is one way the Gemara understands why it is the perpetrator is not going to be sent into Galus Inami. Shema Ihu Kirev Misaso. Or the Gemara gives another possible explanation, that is as follows. Again, it's the same basic idea with a subtle difference, and the Gemara is going to explain how that difference manifests itself halachically. In the second approach of the Gemara, it's not that the wind is accelerating his death, but he himself, the victim himself, is accelerating his own death. He, with his two pipes now severed and terrible exposure, so he himself is panicking, he himself is now going to be running around. and he himself is going to be accelerating his own death. And so, again, you, the perpetrator, obviously were significantly involved in his death, but you weren't the only cause of his death, and therefore you're not going to be sent into Galus. And the Gemara says, might be Nayu, and the Gemara says, and the Nafkamin, a practical difference between these two explanations, Deshachtebe Besa Deshishu Parches. So the Gemara says, well, a Nafkamin would be where you shecht the person in a base of deshisha in a marble home. A marble home, there's no wind in that home. So under such circumstances, so there was no wind accelerating the death. So there, you're now the only cause of his death. And so therefore, you'd be sent into Galus. If, however, it's not because, the svar is not because of the wind, but the svar is because of his own actions, of his own flailing around at me immediately after that he got cut, which accelerated the death. If that's the svara, so then even bebeishisha, even in a marble house, so he still assisted in his own death, and therefore you're not going to be sent to Galus. The Gemara says that would be a nafkamina inami. Gemara says to shachte bebrav lo pirches. Or the Gemara says, let's say he shachted him outside, but he didn't flail whatsoever. Another nafkamina. So if it has to do with the wind accelerating his death, so outside there's wind. If it has to do with he himself flailing, which is accelerating his own death, and you see that he didn't flail, so the Gemara says, so then you're the only cause of his death, and therefore you're going to be sent into Galus. Okay. Sounds like from the Gemara, just take a pause, a moment to breathe, and one additional comment on the Gemara. Sounds like from the Gemara that if you kill somebody, not and he doesn't die immediately based on your action, and something came along in order to accelerate the death, that either an outside force of wind or something he himself did, so you are not technically in violation of Ritzicha. You're not a murderer.
What is
his
status?
Yes. I'm about to make that point. No, it's okay. It's fine. So if he did that bishogeg, it's not a murder. Okay. And that, now, obviously, before we go to Tosis, we made the obvious point. Doesn't condone the act, obviously. In other words, it just simply means that from a technical legal loophole, so you are not branded as a rotzeach, you're not a murderer, and so therefore you're not going to be sent into Galus. Tosus writes, you can see this on the bottom of Kuf Kuf Amud Beis, he writes, V'davka b'galus, v'lo b'misa k'debrishas l'el. This distinction that we just made, that either the wind is accelerating his death or his own flailing is accelerating his death, this is going to be an exemption, but only vis-a-vis Galus, only being sent into exile. But as far as what we would call in this country, right, what do we call it? I was going to say Category 1. not Category 1. Right, premeditated, okay? So
then
the Tosu says, it does not matter. Okay, Tosus is bothered by another Gemara but Tosus says that this halacha is only for Galus, but it's not for Ritzicha. Okay, not for premeditated murder, where if you were intentionally interested in killing him, and you did so, even if there was an assist by either the wind or by him flailing, Tosa says it will not give you a pass on being a first degree. That's what those are the words I was looking for. It would still qualify as first degree murder, meaning you're a rotzeach. Why should such a distinction exist? That needs more. More svara, yeah. more understanding. I don't know.
Yeah, he didn't want to.
Right. So there's just more. Yeah. Right. The halachas will be more. Make okay.
And to kill him doesn't matter. The wind helps you. So
okay. It definitely needs a clarification. Why such a chiluk? Why such a distinction should exist? But Tosa says it does. Such a distinction does exist. Rav Yehuda Omer lo kol v'chule. Then we're up to the next part of the Mishnah, and we're now up to the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Again, just to recap, the Mishnah says that you have to, in order to properly identify the body, you have to see within 3 days of death. After 3 days, decomposition is such where you cannot properly identify the body. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama. Then the Mishnah quoted Rav Yehuda ben Bava, and all Rav Yehuda ben Bava says is, let us not be so objective. It's not 3 days and all be all. It could be something other than 3 days. But that's all the information we have in the Mishnah. And so perhaps the Gemara has to ask the obvious question. What is Rav Yehuda ben Bava arguing? Is he trying to be Mekel or is he trying to be Machmer? Mekel, says Rashi, means what? More than 3 days. Meaning that even if you encounter the body more than 3 days post-mortem, so you should be able to testify. Machmer, less than 3 days. We don't know. The Gemara just wants to know, well, according to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, what does it mean when he says it's not 3 days? Okay, I know what it's not. So what is it? So Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here. The Ugarva Tatava Bikar Me Vaskuo Avi Heja Labasta Tasiyomim. So the Gemara tells a story where a person drowned in a town called Karmei. They brought his body up. It was after 3 days. And Vaansave Ravdimi Minarda La Divasayu. Ravdimi from Narda allowed his wife to remarry, even though the identification of the body came after 3 days post death. Another person was drowned in the not the Euphrates, the thank you, right, I knew it was the other one, so the Tigris River, the Asku'uhu Agishra Dishavisna, and the body was brought back from was dredged up from the from a bridge, and some of his best friends were there to identify the body, and Rav allowed the wife to remarry, and that was 5 days post mortem. So here we have identifications, two stories. One where the identification was done sometime after 3 days. The second story was it was 5 days. And so now the Gemara is going to make the observation. Yes. Who is this halacha going like? It can't be going like the Tanakhama. Tanakhama says only 3 days. So it must be like Rav Yehuda ben Bava. It must be, therefore be that Rav Yehuda ben Bava is going to be Mako. The Gemara is going to make this point. Iamar b'shalma l'kula palagino davik Rav Yehuda ben Bava. Ela iamar l'chomer palagino davik aman. So the Gemara says it can't be that Rav Yehuda ben Bava is being machmir. Because now these great rabbis who allow the wives to remarry, who are they basing the halacha on? Certainly not the Tanakhama, who says 3 days. And if you want to tell me that Rav Yehuda ben Bava is being more machmir than the Tanakhama, so they're not going like Rav Yehuda ben Bava as well. That's a problem. Shani Maya did some say. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're right. Maybe Tanakhama says 3 days. Maybe Rav Yehuda ben Bava says less than 3 days. And how can these great rabbis testify about proper identification of the body, even though the body was dredged up from the water after 3 days, in the second story, 5 days? So the Gemara says, well, maybe the fact that the body was in the water, wadi served as a preservative and held the body's decomposition in abeyance. The Gemara says, v'amar maya marzimaka. The Gemara says, yeah, but do you remember the Gemara that we did about 10 minutes ago in the daf, where the Gemara says that water only exacerbates and accelerates death? So the Gemara says, so the Gemara says, look, if it's an open cut, if it's an open wound, and the body's in water, and I think just, again, I don't want to claim I understand enough about these things, but let's say the body's in salty water, or the water itself is a lot of bacteria inside of it, whatever. Whatever modern explanation you want to give. But if it's an open wound, so then water will in fact accelerate the death. But if there is no open wound and the body just simply submerged in water, so then the water does the opposite. The water will actually preserve the body so that identification can be done even after 3 days. And it could very well be then that both the Tanakhama and Rav Yehuda ben Bava would allow identification, but no, according to the Tanakhama, no later than 3 days, and according to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, even earlier, whatever earlier may mean. And then the Gemara makes one last point in terms of dredging the body out of water, and that is that yes, the water does hold decomposition in abeyance. And yes, you can even testify after 3 days. But the Gemara says one last point, and that is that you have to identify the body immediately after it comes out of water. Because what happens is that the body is waterlogged, and if you let the body out of water and it stays out of water, the body's gonna blow up. So you have to identify immediately after it's dredged up from the water. Mishnah, we are on Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We are learning one of the final Mishnayos in the Masechta. Actually, tomorrow's daf has a lot of Mishnayos. But okay, so the Mishnah says, Nafal Amayim Bein She'esh Lamsof Bein She'ein Lamsof. Let's say the body goes, not the body, the person's alive. So the person falls into water. And according to our Mishnah, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, so it does not matter what kind of body of water it is. It's Mayim She'ein Lahem Sof or Mayim She'ech Lahem Sof. In terms of the definition, stay tuned. We're going to define what those terms mean in just a moment. Ishto Asura, his wife is prohibited. Meaning that does not mean that the person died. We did not see the body. All we saw is the body go down into the water. We didn't see the body come up. And we cannot assume, says the Mishnah, that the person died and his wife cannot remarry. Amar of Meir Maisa Be'echash and Afal Labor Agadol. The person fell into a pit. The word pit over here does not mean an empty pit. It means that it was water. It had water in it. And what happens is that somehow he came up after 3 days. So Rabbi Meir says, so what do you see? That a person can survive. I don't want to say underwater, because as we'll see later on, nobody can survive underwater for 3 days. But somehow, and we're going to go over a couple possibilities how that could be, somehow, even though you saw the body go down, there's a possibility that the person can survive that even more than 3 days later. I'm Rav Yossi, Maisa Besuma Shiara Litzvah Bamara. So Rav Yossi, who we're going to see in just a moment, is going to disagree with Rabbi Meir. Rav Yossi says that there was a blind person who fell into a cave. And again, the word cave over here does not mean empty cave. It means that it was filled with water. V'yared moshcha acharav, and they go in afterwards. V'shal kadesh etetzin avsham, and they're waiting by the bank of this cave in order to see him come up, and he didn't come up. V'siyus nishosayim, and they allow the wives to get remarried. So what's Rav Yossi telling you? What Rav Yossi is telling you is, you know, you don't survive. In other words, if you see somebody go down into water, so that doesn't mean that they're going to... I'm sorry. There is no chance for survival. And Rabbi Yossi says, therefore, the wives are in fact allowed to remarry. Right now, what we have is a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. Stay tuned as we go through the Gemara. We're going to understand the machlokas a little bit better.
This happened last week, I think. The guy fell off his boat, and I think 3 days later he came up.
Right.
Does it happen in the paper?
No, right.
I haven't. He was.
Okay, anyway, there are many stories as such. And then the Mishnah tells another story. Okay, we heard the story earlier this morning. Somebody was we would call scuba diving, but in other words, being held by a rope, and they picked the rope up. Velo alta biyadam ela raglo. And the only thing attached to the rope was only his leg, and we don't know where the rest of his body was. So it depends where the break occurred between the leg and the rest of the body. If it was above the knee, so that means then that he died. There's no way that he could have survived then. The Gemara says that the assumption is, the safe assumption is, that he's dead and his wife can remarry. If, however, it's minarkuva lamata, if it's below the knee, closer to his foot, so then that means then that there's a chance that he survived. We don't know where he is right now, but there's a chance that he survived, and therefore his wife cannot remarry. Okay. Adkan, that takes us through the Mishnah. The Gemara Tanu Rabbana Nafalamayim Beisheish Lamsof Beisheim Lamsof Ishto Asura Div Rebbe Meir. Rebbe Meir says that any time a person falls into water, the person simply is not known to have died, and so therefore there's a chance that he can survive, and as a result of that, if all you saw was a body go into the water, the wife cannot remarry, even if you were there and even if you do not find where the body emerged. And the Chachamim says it depends on what kind of body of water it is. If it's Maim She'ein Lahem Sof, so Rav Yossi says, there we don't assume the person died. If it's Maim She'yesh Lahem Sof, so then we can assume that the person in fact died, and so therefore you could testify that the person went down into water, she'yesh lahem sof, it has an end, and again we'll define it in just a moment what that means, and therefore you can go back and testify and the wife can remarry based on that testimony. The Gemara, now we are making a very basic distinction, and by the way, that's the halacha. The halacha is maim she'ein lahem sof. We're worried that the person actually survived. If it's Maim She'yesh Lahem Sof, we're not worried that the person survived, and so therefore they can marry. The Gemara, the wife can remarry. Gemara is going to ask a very simple question. What does all this mean? What is this distinction? So the Gemara says like this. Maim She'ein Lahem Sof means as follows. You're standing somewhere in the middle of a body of water. You look around, you don't see any landmass. Okay. That is an expanse of water, the likes of such, that even if you see a person go down, the person may in fact have survived. How can that person survive? So if you take a look at Rashi over here, so Rashi, and Rashi said this earlier as well, if it's Mamshe in Lehem Sof, so that means most probably there's a current. So that means as follows. He went down and he got caught by the current, right? Anyone who goes to the beach, so you know that you've got to be careful. There's a current at the beach and it's a chance that you're going to hit a current and the current's going to pull you out and, okay, God forbid. Just be right. Be careful. So the Gemara is assuming if it's Mayim She'ein Lam Sof, so there's a current. And in this case, that could possibly save the individual. So you saw the person go down. You didn't see him come up. So what are you going to assume? So what the Gemara now is arguing, then this is a halacha, this is the opinion of the Chachamim of the Braisa, and we'll see soon enough, it's also the opinion of Yossi and our Mishnah, that the current could have pulled him to another location. He then came up, and as far as we, the observers, we didn't see. And so therefore there is a possibility of survival. As long as now there's a possibility of survival, you can't go back and report that the person died, because you don't know. If it's Mayim Sheyesh Lehem Sof, that means that we know where this body of water ends. If the person would have come up, we would have seen him come up. The fact is that we saw him go down, we didn't see him come up, so therefore we can accurately report that he's dead. It is more than a safe assumption. That is the difference between Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof and Mayim She'esh Lehem Sof. Let's continue. The Amar Abaye. We're in the middle of Kuf Chaf Alaf Amin Al. Kol Shomid V'ro Amir Baruch Hosav. I'm sorry, I read that. How Gavra D'Tava Ba'Agma D'Samke. So there was a person who drowned in a swamp. Antzeve Rav Shila D'Vasai. Rav Shila permitted his wife to remarry. Amarle Rav Shmuel. I'm sorry. Amarle Rav Lishmuel Tanishmate. So Rav says to Shmuel, Rav Shila is a grossly distorting the halacha, meaning Rav Shila is wrong. The wife should not be able to remarry. We don't know for sure the husband's dead, and Rav Shila allowed the wife to remarry. That is malpractice on the part of Rav Shila. And what Rav says to Shmuel is maybe we should put him in cherem. Okay, so Amar Lei Nishlach Lei Bereisha. So Shmuel says, wait one second. Let's first investigate the matter. Let's do our due diligence. Then and only then, if necessary, we'll put Rav Shila in Chayram. But let's first do our due diligence. So, Shalchulei, Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof, Ishto Asura Muteres. So they made some inquiries to Rav Shila. Let's ask you some simple questions. If it's Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof, so what's the halacha? What's the status of the report? So Shalchulei, Ishto Asura. So he says, I know the halacha. This is Rav Shila responding. I know the halacha, wife is prohibited. Meaning, we can't assume that the person died. So now, in this particular case that you pasken, in the swamp, what kind of water is that? Is that a Mayim She'esh Lehem Sof or Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof? Shachlam, Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof. Who? So he says, it's Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof. It's an expansive body of water. Okay? So now, think about what you just said. You know the halacha is that when a person goes down into Mayim She'ein Lehem Sof, that doesn't mean that he absolutely died. There's a possibility of survival. And you know the halacha is that the woman's not allowed to remarry. So now, the obvious next question is, what were you thinking? So, Umar, my time, Avad Hachi. So, what were you thinking? So, Mita Te'ina Ana Sarve Kevin Dekava V'Kaime Kemayim She'esh Lehem Sof Dami. So his explanation is that I thought that the swamp is a stagnant body of water. You know, just a little tidbit of information I know. The Everglades is not a stag. The Everglades flows.
Right,
it's right. It's really slow, but the Everglades does in fact flow. To my understanding, is that it flows south, but it's a very slow moving body of water. What Rav Shila thought is that this particular swamp was a stagnant body of water. There was no flow, there was no current, and therefore the person went down, he didn't come back up again. So he thought that this categorizes under Mayim She'esh Lehem Sof. And that's why he assumed that the person's dead and allowed for the wife to marry. Velohi. And the Gemara says it's not true. Kemadika gali emergali ishpalu. So the Gemara says it's not true that there were, you're wrong, meaning you didn't understand the Metzius. The fact is that there was a current to the water, and because there was a current, it's very possible that he got caught by the current and that he came up somewhere else. And so therefore they said to Rav Shila, you're just wrong. But at least we know it was malpractice. Okay, I don't want to use that word too generously, but it was not intentional. In other words, he made a mistake, and we understand what the mistake was. He thought that it was a stagnant body of water. It's not. Fine. But he knew the halacha. So what should happen is that because it's now the body of water falls under the category of Maim She'ein La'im Sof, so therefore we don't know if the husband died, and therefore the woman cannot remarry. What happens in this particular case? Okay, I believe it. Stay tuned. Actually, the Gemara itself is going to answer the questions. So Karishmo led the Rav Lo Yuna Letzadei Kol Avan. So Shmuel and Rav now cite a breath of relief. Now it's funny, Rav Shila is really the one who is, you can well imagine, should be and probably is the one that's most stressed from all this. But Rav and Shmuel are the ones who are sighing a breath of relief. Shmuel says regarding Rav, oh, beautiful, Lo Yuna, the tzaddik called Oven. You know, it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes care of its tzaddikim. Meaning, because what Rav was ready to do was put Rav Shila in Chayrim. Which in this case would have been totally inappropriate. Rav Shila was not corrupting the halacha. He knew exactly what the halacha was. He just didn't know how to apply in this particular case. Which is not right, but it's not worthy of excommunication. And Kari Rav Allah Jishmael, Uchua Berov Yu'atz. And as far as Shmuel is concerned, Shmuel gave Rav Eitzah. So Rav says regarding Shmuel, I really thank you for the Eitzah. Okay, see, nice. You get to see in the Gemara over here the kind of friendship that Rav and Shmuel had and the kind of respect they had for one another. Okay, Tanya. The Gemara quotes the Brisa, Rabbi Maisa B'Shnei B'nei Adam, Machmirim Mikamurim B'Yardain. There were two people who were fishing in the Yardain with nets. And one went into an underground cave where the fish were congregating. Vishaka Chama. And what happened was, these are deep sea fishermen, right? And one went under the water, went into this underground cave in order to get the fish. And what happened was that the sun set, and he didn't know how to exit the cave. So he's underwater, but in an underwater cave, so allowed him a chance to breathe. Now his friend over there, who was standing at the edge, waited until he would die. I understand in a lot of these cases, you know, I can wonder out loud, you know, maybe a rescue attempt, but okay, there is another series of halachas, which is to what degree are you supposed to risk your life in order to save somebody else's life? Okay, there's that consideration, but right now, to be totally honest, the Gemara right now is focusing on at what point can you assume death, what point can you not assume death. So that's the discussion for today. So that's what we're focusing on for today. So anyway, the halacha is ubava odia besoch beso lamarcha. So he told everybody in the house. In other words, and the assumption is the other fisherman's dead. Lamachar zachar chama. The next day, sun comes up. Vehikar pizchasha mechila. And this person who was submerged in the water overnight, but again, he was not underwater. He was in an underwater cave. He had plenty of chances to breathe. And next, now as the light comes up and he's able to see how to exit, uva masa hespe gadol besoch beso. And he walks home to his own eulogy. Okay, I know it's something that, you know, there it appeals to us all. Like, how exactly is that eulogy going to go? So, yeah, correct. No, all of us would like to hear it. Amar Rebbe Kama Gedolim Divrei Chacham Shamar Maim She Yesh Lam Sof Ishto Mater She Ein Lam Sof Ishto Asura. To which he said, unbelievable, the Chachamim knew exactly what they're talking about, making a distinction between Maim She Yesh Lam Sof Maim She Ein Lam Sof. So the Gemara says, wait one second. This has nothing to do with the current. This has to do with the fact that there was an underwater cave and he was able to breathe underwater. So Gemara says, okay, so now that we're talking about underwater caverns, so the Gemara says, so really, I don't understand. Every body of water should be concerned. So the Gemara's explanation is, Gemara says, no. In a stagnant body of water, you do not have this situation of underwater caverns. Somehow, and again, I'm not explaining because I don't know enough about the natural world, but somehow the currents are the ones that create these underwater caverns. And so if it's Maim Sheyesh Lem, so if it's a stagnant body of water, so you're not going to have these underwater caverns. The person goes down, he's dead. The Gemara is attempting to make a distinction. If we're talking about Maim Shein La Sof, where there's a current and he's getting swept away, and it's a Talmud Chacham Tzurba Mirabanan, if he came up somewhere, we would have heard about it. The Gemara has a general assumption that Talmid Chachamim in the time of the Gemara had tremendous notoriety, and so therefore, if he came up somebody, we would have found out. Velohi, the Gemara says, yeah, but that distinction is simply not true. Not in this halacha. So the Gemara says that b'di'evet, if the wife remarries, fine, but lechatchila we tell the wife not to remarry. And Hedy, this answers your question that you asked me about 5 minutes ago. So the question that you asked me was, what if b'di'evet she remarried based on the fact that the body went down, so she could stay with her? She could stay with her husband. I understand if the husband comes back.
What happens to the kid?
The husband left to give it again.
I think the halacha is
remarried.
I would assume. I don't know if I'm right. I would assume take to mizeh mizeh. You know, in other words, like
say that. It says that she can stay.
Now, only if the report was. I can't imagine. I was just think this through. The husband returns. She could stay with her. That's very. No.
Yeah, it says married.
Yeah.
No, I understand that, but married meaning on the report.
No, it says it doesn't matter if it's a scholar or not.
No, it doesn't.
Married, she stays with him.
Not, but only upon the report about his death. Not. Let's just think this through. If he comes back,
dead, then there's what's the question?
It's not a question of whether he's dead or not. It's a question of what we know.
That's not what it sounds like.
Okay.
All right. And he says, look,
I feel like
she can't be married.
All right. Let's continue the discussion after Kaddish. I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready to argue this. I can't see it any other way. But okay. Rabbi Chanan, Rabbi Chanan,